your internet flagship station for sports.
Voice America Sports.
Good evening and welcome to the Sports Maverick Show with the Oprah of Sports, Ida Moyet. Now, the Sports Mavericks.
Welcome to the Sports Maverick Show, where we redefine the elite athlete by bringing education, athleticism, and community service together. We balance the pursuit of academic excellence and sports participation. As you know, we basically engage in straightforward talk, spontaneous talk, and unscripted talk by our experts. We explore the challenges of success and failure in sports, as well as help parents and athletes navigate the transition from high school, college, and on to the pros. We like to put fun back into sports and recognize our role models in sports through our Sports Maverick All-Star Award program. Folks, tonight we have got an excellent program for you tonight. We're going to be talking about what we always talk about, the media, what's in the news. And, of course, we've got a very, very special guest with us tonight that I'm so honored to introduce to you. His name is Greg H. Lee, Jr. Let me tell you something about, I'm going to call him Gregory, because I'm sure that's what his mother calls him. So.
Yeah.
Gregory joined the Boston Globe as a senior assistant sports editor in November of 2004. He's responsible for the award-winning Sunday sports section. Now, before joining the Globe, he worked 5 years at the Washington Post, beginning in October of 1999. And during this time in D.C., he served as a layout editor, wire editor, and deputy high school sport editor. Now, again, that's just some of the accolades about him. But what I want to do is I want to introduce you to Greg, because I want him to tell you about his climb from sports from the time he was 19 and he worked for the New Orleans Times-Picayune in 1993 all the way up to now. Greg, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Well, Greg, tell us a little bit, because, you know, journalism is not the easiest thing out there because it requires a lot of English. And a lot of times people like, get me out of this English class, it's over with.
Yeah.
But we
yeah.
know that English is the, quote-unquote, it's our language, and
yeah.
it's also the most important language that we can communicate when we're talking about any subject matter.
Yeah.
But sports itself has been a real precious area.
Yeah.
It's been reserved for a few. I understand that, you know, out of the statistics out there, 88% of total staff right now, 300 newspapers, basically are non-minorities, and only Afro-Americans make up about 6.2% of the newsroom. So it's a
yeah.
little uneven, isn't it?
Very much uneven. Me and my colleagues around the nation, the black journalists around the country, we've always had conversations about this and tell anecdotes of how we've been passed over for positions, being pigeonholed in certain spots in covering sports such as college basketball, just basketball in general. So yes, the coverage is unbalanced. And given that the fact that, you know, sports is being dominated by more minorities, you would think that, you know, the newspapers reflect that trend in terms of trying to portray an accurate picture of athletes who are out there making good news and even bad news, but also giving the proper perspectives on the subject matters at hand.
That's very interesting, Greg, because when I look back at the history of newspapers, a lot of it was grounded in the way that maybe a certain group of people, immigrants, could
yeah.
express themselves. So
yeah.
therefore, they couldn't become the politicians because
yeah.
they were considered as not qualified for to be a politician,
yeah.
but they could express themselves in a newspaper. And as a result of that, I think that that became a haven for a lot of people to go to as
yeah.
an expression.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about sports. Now, we know that Afro-Americans dominate in basketball.
Yep.
They dominate in football.
Yep.
Okay, obviously we've got Tiger Woods that is just burning up, you know, the greens in golf.
Yes.
We've got Venus and Serena, of course, and also James Blake that has done a
yep.
phenomenal job in tennis. And sometimes if they're not even present, you know, the crowd doesn't even come
yeah, exactly.
in that response. So from an economic point of view, you know, minority athletes are really fueling this billion-dollar industry, you know, $17 billion industry. So, yeah. So why is it that, you know, there's not enough minorities? Is it because how we enter into the system? Because, I mean, you had a long journey.
Yeah.
I watched your journey.
Yeah.
And, from 19 years old, you said, look, I want to do this. And you started working in sports. You did an internship.
Yes.
So who was your mentor that said to you, go ahead and ask for an internship? Who was the person who guided you and got you on the right track?
Well, the first person who I really got introduced into sports journalism was, it was a couple of white guys in New Orleans named Billy Turner and Tim Ellaby. Tim Ellaby was a sports writer at the Times-Picayune in New Orleans, where I was a college kid looking to get an entry in the sports department just to see what the world, you know, what the newspapers are like. And they were impressed by what I brought to the table, and they hired me as a person who kept compiled all the scores in the newspaper, putting all the box scores and statistics in the newspaper, and I was there, you know, editing that stuff and placing it in there. And then after that, I really got into it, learned what actually happens inside of a sports department. And then after, I was 19 as a sophomore in college at Xavier in New Orleans, and then that following that. That next fall, and then the next spring, I got an internship offer from the Sports Journalism Institute, which is a program designated to encourage minorities and women into careers in sports journalism. That led me to my mentor, who I talk to on probably every day, Leon Carter, who is the sports editor of the New York Daily News. He is one of six black sports editors leading sports sections around the country. So that journey started off there when I was 19, and after that internship in Tennessee, where I worked for the Commercial Appeal, I was a reporter and did various different things, and I had another internship the next summer. But the most important thing I think that happened to me was after I graduated from college, when Tim Ellaby asked me when I graduated from college, what did I want to do? Do I want to be a reporter? Do I want to be an editor? And I said, well, I wanted his job, which is a sports editor, so that means I'm staying in the office and be a copy editor. Because I knew that sports editors had more influence in the newsroom and shaping coverage, and I knew that there was a lot of, you know, brothers and sisters who were going to be reporting, be doing sports reporting jobs, and I felt that there weren't enough of us being in the inside to represent and to, influence coverage and also try to bring people along and hire, you know, have the authority one day to hire, you know, talented minorities to come in sports departments. So I took that track of becoming an editor, and that's how I did that in New Orleans for 6 and 5 years and moved on to D.C., and now I'm here at one of the top five sports sections in the country.
Well, I mean, you make it sound like it was a walk in the park, but
no,
I'm almost certain it was not a walk in the park.
A lot of long hours, sometimes, you know, I'm the only black person in the room, so in the sports department, you know, dealing with stereotypes of black athletes, picking and choosing my spots and what to debate about and how, how editors should present the news within the newsroom and make sure everything is in a proper perspective, and also having diverse voices and diverse opinions, and making people understand and be aware of the different culture, you know, background. You know, the perfect example is, you know, with the Michael Vick situation. It was a convention, the Black Journalists Convention in Las Vegas, and it was a conversation. It was a panel discussion talking about the difference between how blacks and whites view dogs, and the moderator had mentioned that, you know, Mike Vick now learned a lesson not to mess with one of white people's treasures, which is dogs. And then my boss, who was at the convention at my invitation, came back to me and spoke to me and said, you know, Greg, you have a dog, but, you know, I said, yeah, I do have a dog, but when I talk to my parents and I tell them I walk my dog, they say that, you know, you're acting white. You know, black people don't treat dogs the same way as white people. So there's a different cultural, background perspective that he didn't know, and then he understood. And that's a small example of how, you know, sports editors and journalists in general don't really have a full view of the role that they're supposed to, but they really don't, because they don't really look at, really truly, or understand both sides of the fence, because they haven't lived it. Whereas with black journalists, we have to know the other side of the fence, because the only way we're able to, a lot of stories are based in other cultures and other stuff like that. So we need to know that stuff, and also on top of our stuff. So it's a little bit, you know, we have to know, but white people don't really, you know, in their world, they really don't feel like they have to really know about our culture, which is a shame.
Well, let's go back and talk a little bit about that. So what you're saying is because of the unbalance of, say, and it's white and it's black, and as simple as that, you're saying that we sometimes get uneven reporting, and sometimes we actually have, in a sea of controversy, you know, with two different athletes doing the same thing or allegedly doing the same thing, the black athlete always falls by the wayside. I was just looking at Donovan McNabb's performance last night, which was, you know, of course, fell short. But then Drew Brees, who got his tail whipped between his legs and sent back to New Orleans, unfortunately, because I know you're from New Orleans, but... But we don't see that much about Drew Brees.
No, no.
But we hear Donovan is time to go, but we don't hear that Drew Brees is time to go. So just address that. I mean, what goes into that microcosm of writing a story that Donovan needs to go, but Drew Brees, he just goes, you know, back to New Orleans, and he gets another chance?
Well, one thing is for sure, there's two different markets and two different mindsets. Philadelphia, it's known to be a tough media market. There's two newspapers there. There's a lot of TV coverage there. It's on the East Coast. You're going to get a lot more scrutiny on the East Coast. Plus, you know, Donovan McNabb, everyone's going to watch him because he just came off major knee surgery. The same thing that happened last year to Dante Culpepper. He had lots of scrutiny because he was rushing back for the knee surgery. And people want to see what can he do. I mean, and especially last year after, you know, Philadelphia, they went to the playoffs. It was led by Jeff Garcia. The Eagles let go of Jeff Garcia. So naturally people are going to, you know, attack Donovan McNabb right now because of those factors. Now, given that his past, you know, in terms of he did lead the team to, you know, four championship NFC championship games, he didn't win a Super Bowl, but he's done more than Drew Brees. Whereas with Drew Brees, he's in a situation where there's a little media scrutiny. He's down there tucked away safely in New Orleans, where there's only one newspaper and a few TV, you know, TV stations. But it's not like ESPN's flying down there because Philadelphia did. In Philadelphia, ESPN has a correspondent. They have two correspondents based in Philadelphia. There's no correspondence for ESPN down in New Orleans. So it's a different. So in terms of that, you're just taking out the first part, the racial aspect of it. I get into that later. But in just terms of the strict media coverage, you know, Donovan McNabb is in a much more media glare.
So because he's in a more dominant market, he's going to get more coverage.
He's going to get more coverage.
Well, very interesting that you say that. Now, I know I was flying back from the Pittsburgh game, and Drew Brees is on the cover of American Airlines magazine, American Way.
Yeah.
They call him Drew Brees, New Orleans Renaissance Man.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that tells you that isn't it something that has is it are we based on character
sometimes
or perceived character?
Well, I know he went down there and Drew Brees, when he moved to the city, he signed a new contract right after, you know, he signed a deal with the Saints for $60 million. This is right 2 or 3 months after Katrina happened. So he went, and then not only he did that, he's living inside the city where he repaired a damaged home, and he's really being a part of much of the community. So he didn't, you know, so the thing he did was, I think what they're looking at from there is his character in terms of just going down there, not being afraid. You know, you got $60 million reasons why to go down there, but at the same time, not be afraid of another natural disaster, and also staying in a part of the city, that, you know, that got hurt by it. So, you know, I think that's where it was coming from with that story.
Well, we're going to come back again in about 3 minutes or so. We're going to continue with Greg Lee Jr. Of course, we're going to come back. I'm going to ask Greg about his new, actually his second term. He's been elected for the second term for the actual sports task force for the National Association of Black Journalism. And we're going to talk about what they're doing through their efforts there to basically bring more sports journalist people to the fold, as well as we're going to talk about what Spike Lee is doing, because he's got a very interesting project. And we're going to also talk a little bit about some of the upcoming conventions that people who are interested in sports journalism may want to attend. This is Ademoye, your host. We'll be back in 3 minutes.
Your internet flagship station for sports, Voice America Sports.
In a landscape dominated by male talk show hosts, the Sports Maverick Show with host Ida Moye, a.k.a. the Oprah of sports, has consistently offered a new dimension to sports since the year 2000. Ida's new five-part CD series entitled Survival Guide for Student Athletes from High School, College to the Pros is a must-have for every parent with an elite athlete. The Sports Maverick Show is where the best gets better on and off the field. Order your survival guide today. Log on to www.pro-readycoach.com. That's PROREADYCOACH.com. Pro-readycoach.com.
From the Super Bowl to the World Cup and every major sporting event in between, Front Row with sports travel insider Robert Tuchman will take you on a private ride into the exclusive world of high-end sports travel. Tune in every Thursday at 12 p.m. Eastern as Robert interviews key event organizers as well as star athletes and celebrities who attend these events. That's Thursdays at 12 p.m. Eastern right here on the Voice America Sports Channel.
We just say it like it is.
And you can too.
Internet Sports Talk Radio.
The Voice of America Sports.
You are listening to the Sports Maverick Show with Ida Moyer. If you would like to join the conversation today, please call now. The number is 1-866-472-5787. That's 1-866-472-5787. Now, back to the Sports Mavericks.
Welcome back to the Sports Maverick Show. This is Ida Moyer, your host, and I am here with my special guest tonight, Greg H. Lee, Jr., Senior Assistant Sports Editor of the Boston Globe. Of course, he has been reelected for the second term as the Chairman of the Sports Task Force of the National Association of Black Journalists, and I just want to give you kudos on that, Greg. That's a vote of confidence. I understand you got 200 members strong.
Yes.
Tell me a little bit about it. You guys took over Sin City in Vegas, and
yeah.
I understand you had a real powwow there.
Yes, we had the Sports Task Force. We're a group, an advocacy group within the National Association of Black Journalists. We have over 3,500 black journalists as a member of our organization. And we have a group within that organization called the Sports Task Force, which we're advocates for more diversity in sports departments, as well as mentorship programs for our young students who are aspiring to become sports journalists, and just also have professional development for our veteran members in the group. This year we had a few good workshops this year. One of them, we had actually a panel discussion on the state of boxing. We had, you know, Don King and Floyd Mayweather speaking about that. We also had a panel discussion on the black athlete, based on are they being portrayed wrongly in the media. So it was a great panel discussion with that. We also had an annual Pioneer Awards where we honor those sports legends, African-American sports legends within the convention city that we are in Las Vegas. So we honor a number of people there. And we had a sports mentorship breakfast with Stephen A. Smith, who was our keynote speaker, giving a motivation speech to all of our students and as well as our members. It's basically our family reunion every year that we get together and recharge our batteries to go back into what we do in our daily lives. And we do this 360 in terms of what we do as a group. We do advocacy things. If we see anything in the media within our industry, if African Americans are being hired in positions and not even given a chance to be interviewed, we write letters to those editors to let them know that we are watching them. We also recommend people for position job openings, and if they want to find qualified black journalists, they usually come to me to find out, and I network and try to get people hooked up with various positions around the country, because that's what we do. We want to make sure that everyone has a fair shot at having a great career in sports journalism, and that's a responsibility that I take seriously.
Excellent. Well, you know, Greg, you bring up a great point, students.
Yes.
And parents that are out there, you know, just because your kid is playing sports, you remember, put education first.
Yes.
And always think about what's going to happen when they actually stop playing sports.
Exactly.
So this is a great career that one can be pursuing, because
yes,
who knows it better than an athlete who's played the sport?
Exactly. I have one of my former students who now is a reporter in St. Louis. She used to be a soccer goalie for a college. You know, she knew she couldn't play sports all her life, but she used sports, her sports and her knowledge of sports and her passion in sports, and transfer that to a career in sports journalism. I never was an athlete in terms of, you know, playing in college or playing in high school, but I've always liked sports. And I've always liked to write, so I was able to put the two passions that I love and put that together and carve a niche for my life. And I think, you know, a lot of kids need, you know, if they want to maintain a life in sports some way, journalism is a good way to do it. And I think, you know, journalism, it's more of a, not going to say popular, but, you know, back in, you know, 60s and 70s, journalism wasn't, you know, the black community, one of the top vocations. It was like more of, you want to be a teacher, lawyer, those the traditional route, the traditional type of careers, because still newspapers were very segregated and very cliquish and clubbish type thing. But now, you know, there's more opportunities there, more programs designated to help, you know, try to foster more, you know, more diverse voices in newsrooms, and especially after the Kerner Commission that has happened. So, you know, this generation, you know, they're working themselves into journalism. Before, like, when I got into journalism, my parents had no idea about careers in journalism. They thought I should have been, my mom thought I should have been an accountant because she thought it was a guaranteed way of me making money. But then when she saw what I was doing and knew what I was doing, that she saw it's a realistic vocation to have. And I think this generation, you know, so when I have my kids, they'll be exposed to what I do because, you know, I did it, so they can see it. They don't have to actually do it, but at least there's a generation of journalists who will have kids now and that they actually will be exposed to careers in journalism.
I think that's excellent. Now, I want to go back and talk about the economics of the sports journalism and the impact that a bad story can have on someone's purse. Now, particularly during the draft.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
You know, we know that, you know, from my experience of working with athletes and working with agents and working, of course, along with parents and consulting them, I have found that there's some crucial times between the time that the kids finish their bowl games to the time they go to the Senior Bowl.
Yes.
Till they go to the combine, till they go to their pro day, these are the pieces that usually where people fall short of. Now, I remember I had Willie Parker on my show.
Yeah.
And Willie Parker, I asked him this question. I said, Willie, what did you do before you actually, you know, because you weren't drafted, what did you do to prepare for the draft? He said, absolutely nothing. Because he only played a couple games at North Carolina, nobody was talking about Willie Parker.
No.
Nobody was talking about him.
No one saw him.
And no one saw him, so therefore they weren't talking about him. But what I found behind the scenes when they go into the war room, they look at high school tapes.
Yeah.
And they look at 13 game tapes.
Yeah.
But the press a lot of times gets it wrong.
Oh, yeah.
And particularly, I've been tracking Mel Kiper for the last 4 years, and I'm almost certain that he has directed, you know, his press pieces have directed careers in the opposite direction that they would have gone had he not said what he said, particularly because of the way that people look at him as having a gospel. He's the gospel person. But he gets about maybe 30 to 40% of this is it. So that means what makes him that, who gives him that reign, and why don't we have somebody on the minority side or on the other side countering that? I mean, I've seen that we do that at draft time, but prior to that, you know, he's putting these sheets out, and everybody's reading his sheets. It costs a fortune to get them. It's a money-making venture, and people buy into it, but he gets it wrong.
Yeah.
So, and I think that's unfair to sports.
Well, I think with that, for one, looking at, you know, I parallel that with my type, with my vocation. You know, scout, you know, he's probably the only guy, probably there's other guys, but he's the best known one. And also there aren't many people who do what he does, actually do what he does this year round. And I think that, you know, when it comes to that, it's the same thing with journalism. You know, in our community, we're just not scratching the surface in journalism. And just with sports scouting and stuff of that sort, we just scratch the surface. There are African Americans who are out there doing scouting and have their own services and stuff. They work for ESPN. They run the scouting departments for ESPN. But they're not on the level of Mel Kiper, who's done this for over 25 years. And you know, anyone in the media, especially scouts, people like Mel Kiper, they will get things wrong. And I don't expect Mel Kiper to be 100% right, because every football reporter on draft day, they have their predictions on who's going to get drafted where in the first round.
Mm-hmm.
And more than likely, especially in my experience, they get no one gets no more than 10 to 15% right. So that is an inexact science. He just provides information for people to read to get ready for the draft and let people do the expect. Basically, what Mel Kiper does is get people all juiced up for the draft, get them fired up, read all the information, study all the people in the draft, and then have people debate on it all the time. And he's just a vehicle for people to debate on things. So, but like I said before, you know, African Americans, any minorities, you know, they'll get into it. You know, especially I see a lot of former football players, actually current football players. Namely, like Corey Chavers, who's always on ESPN every year doing a draft show, but this is what he wants to do. He wants to be a Mel Kiper, but you have to have those networking and the vehicles to do that. So he's taking advantage of his platform being a current football player and his love of studying and scouting because he has resources, his own money he made from the NFL to start a business like that. He can afford to buy tapes for every college of scouting kids around the college because he has access to it. So until people, if athletes especially, use their current platform to get to the next level for the next career choice after playing sports, then they could be able to supplant Mel Kiper. But I think that will happen soon. That will happen real soon.
Because in my humble opinion, mm-hmm. is that we have to take charge mm-hmm. of our careers.
Yes.
And I mean by that, the athlete has to take charge of his career.
Yeah.
And the parents have to be involved,
yeah.
and they have to look at every single comment that's made. In
yeah.
other words, one of the things that is so easy to do is that parents out there,
yeah.
you want to go ahead and put alerts on Yahoo
yeah.
Sports for yeah. your kids. Because every time something is written on your kids, you
yeah.
need to read about it and know what they say. Because what people say, it
yep.
does matter.
Especially in this 24-hour news cycle with aging internet where everything is out there.
Okay, we're going to come back in about 3 more minutes after our break here, and we're talking to Greg H. Lee Jr., Senior Assistant Sports Editor for the Boston Globe, and also the actual Chairman of Sports Task Force for the National Association of Black Journalism. And we're going to come back and we're going to talk about basically giving report cards to how people out there in the press are handling some of these sticky controversies like O.J., Vic, Bonds, Belichick, and, of course, Rick Anthro. We'll be back in 3. This is Ida Moya, your host. You're listening to Sports Maverick.
Your internet flagship station for sports, Voice America Sports.
In a landscape dominated by male talk show hosts, the Sports Maverick Show with host Ida Moye, a.k.a. the Oprah of sports, has consistently offered a new dimension to sports since the year 2000. Ida's new 5-part CD series entitled Survival Guide for Student Athletes from High School, College to the Pros is a must-have for every parent with an elite athlete. The Sports Maverick Show is where the best gets better on and off the field. Order your survival guide today. Log on to www.pro-readycoach.com. That's PROREADYCOACH.com. Pro-readycoach.com.
Being a winner takes a little more than just skill and a whole lot more than luck. It takes preparation and having a winning attitude. Indy 500 race car driver and motivational speaker Lynn St. James brings to the Voice America Network that winning attitude. And the Winner's Circle with Lynn St. James airs live every Tuesday afternoon at 12 Pacific Time, 3 Eastern on the Voice America Sports Channel. Lynn will share her views on motorsports and women in sports. Lynn's 30-plus year career as a race car driver has taken her around the world and enabled her to meet winners from all walks of life. Join Lynn and her guest as they offer their insight on what it takes to get into the winner's circle, whatever the challenge may be. If you have a desire to learn what it takes to be a winner from winners, or if you want to share your formula for success, tune into In the Winner's Circle with Lynn St. James every Tuesday afternoon at 12 Pacific Time on the Voice America Sports Channel. Here it is, sports fans, the Arthur AG Sports Radio Show, where we talk about sports and everything in between, from high school to college sports, right up to the pros. Join host Arthur AG, co-star of the 1994 sports documentary, Hoop Dreams, for the Arthur AG Sports Radio Show every Tuesday at 2 p.m. Pacific Time, 5 Eastern, premiering on the Voice America Sports Channel. Arthur will host a variety of guests and will give the average fan a platform to voice his or her opinion about how sports play a significant role in our society. Get set for hard-hitting topics that cut to the soul of sports. Sports. See the sports industry through the eyes of the kid in the city and the kid in the suburbs. Hear from the businessmen and, yes, women from around the world. Whatever your passion is, football, basketball, baseball, golf, soccer, NASCAR, or hockey, the Arthur Agee Sports Radio Show is for you. That's every Tuesday at 2 p.m. Pacific Time, right here on the Voice America Sports Channel.
Your internet flagship station for sports.
Voice America Sports.
You are listening to the Sports Maverick Show with Ida Moyer. If you would like to join the conversation today, please call now. The number is 1-866-472-5787. That's 1-866-472-5787. Now, back to the Sports Mavericks.
Welcome back to the Sports Mavericks Show. This is Ida Moyer, your host, and you're listening to the Sports Mavericks Show. Again, I have with me here my special guest, Greg H. Lee Jr., Senior Assistant Sports Editor of the Boston Globe, and also the second-term chairman of the Sports Task Force for the National Association of Black Journalism. Greg, welcome back to the show.
Hey, good. I'm glad to be here.
Greg, you know, we have been really talking, you know, this last hour here about the nuances of the sports industry and the reporting from the journalist's point of view. Now, obviously, there's different medias out there. There is, of course, the internet, which we're on right now. There's, of course, you know, the television, the cable television, the MP3s and all of that. So sports is so far-reaching now. In fact, this show right here is heard in 14 different countries around the world, and we've reached over 25 million people since we've been doing this show. What I realize is that sports is almost like the human language.
Yep.
I mean, it's like everywhere you go, I get emails from, in fact, we get them from the Middle East, we get them from Australia, we get them from Japan, we get them from China. Now, on this broadcast tonight, I picked up an email, and they're asking me about how will you grade how the media is handling the OJ situation right now?
Well, you know, in this 20th, I would grade it, I'm not really surprised how they, you know, how the media, you know, goes after you know, certain things. You know, this is the next hot topic story. You know, one minute is the shootings at you know, Virginia Tech, and then next thing you know, something else happened, and then that's the next news. So I mean, what, say for example, with O.J. Simpson, this thing will last as long as it can, and then the next, say for example, a bigger story happens, O.J. will be forgotten. So right now, when there's something new, everyone wants to get their piece of the pie on it, and you're gonna get, you know, CNN all the time. You're going to see MSNBC. You're going to get internet reports. Everyone is so fascinated with O.J. because everyone knows the story about O.J. So the media, they flock. It's like ambulance chasers, and they go after wherever the first accident happens. They all running at the scene at the same time. So with the coverage of O.J., what grade do I give it so far? I give it, you know, a C because it's not complete, you know, it's everyone's after it, you know. It's not surprising that, you know, that they're going after it. This is like the same thing with the whole, what's her name, Paris Hilton situation. Everyone was after Paris Hilton. They followed the story, and she's really non-news. She's really just a girl with money who's, you know, who's so semi-famous, and everyone follows her. So the way the 24-hour cycle goes, the internet, is people, you got to feed the beast. You got to keep feeding. So it's not a surprise reaction to whole O.J. coverage. I expect the coverage to be, you know, similar to what it was when he was on trial. But from what I've seen so far, to me, it's been fair. Because of the alleged crimes and what we've seen on the, you know, what we've seen on YouTube or wherever, it's been reported with the actual alleged scene of the crime.
Do you think that the media was too harsh on Vic, or? Bottom line is that
now,
is a fall from grace. I mean, O.J. fell from grace.
Yeah.
But he was sort of held up by, you know, not actually getting the criminal conviction.
Yeah.
But at the same time, do you think that people harbor these feelings? Like, just like a detective who's been on a case trying to solve a case, do you think some media people harbor these feelings that one day I'm going to get the big story on this person, I'm going to bury him?
I don't think so, because if that's the case, I mean, I'm looking at Bill Belichick. A lot of people feel the same way about him and how he screwed the media over the years, and now they feel like we've got something on him, now we get to take him down. And with Michael Vick's case, I think, you know, because the people, you know, I know the people, and especially people, reporters in Atlanta who's covering it, I know them very well, so I know they've been very fair and sensitive towards it. But the media at large, the bottom line, as I mentioned to you earlier, there's always, you know, always going to be two or three perspectives coming from that whole incident. You know, people need to remember, Michael Vick, you know, he's from the South, he's a Southern boy. And in the South, you know, it's, although it is a crime, although it, you know, it's illegal to, you know, to fight dogs, it's something that happens in the community on a regular basis, and they could have stopped that long. There's other places, people who does it, people cockfight. There's a lot of legal things that happens in the rural South. I'm in the South, so I know. The problem that was that Rebecca Vicky kept doing it when he, you know, we became a grown up, and he really didn't have to do it. But when he was growing up, he didn't think there was anything wrong with it.
Well, from a legal perspective,
it was wrong.
It was gambling.
It was gambling. So, he got trouble with that. So, I'm not going to complain about that part, the gambling part. But I will, you know, looking at it from all perspectives, I'm not saying he's right, but all I'm saying is that there's a cultural difference in terms of, like I said, in Louisiana, it's cockfighting. Is PETA going down there to stop all the cockfighting? I don't see him down there. So I just see that unless there's a proper perspective in place in the frame of what we're covering, Vic would never get his fair shake because there would never be people really truly looking at his actual background, and you know all they see is that he killed America's best friend, a dog, and had him in fights, and he allegedly tortured him. And bet money on the dogs.
Which is, in my opinion, when you look at the type of dogs that were involved there, those are some of the most dangerous dogs on earth.
But then the
blending of those dogs, was like almost like a hybrid, so they're already a misfit, and once you can't really make them pets.
Yeah.
So you can't make that type of dog a pet.
I agree with you totally, but when I make that argument, you know what they say? Well, those dogs aren't meant to be trained. You had to train those dogs to be killers like that. So some people will come back with an argument just like I did with you. I made the same argument. You know, pit bulls, I own a dog, but I wouldn't want a pit bull because a pit bull, all they do is kill people. They hurt people.
That's all. I mean, they basically have one master, and they'll turn on their master.
Exactly.
I mean, at least according to what I've read about them. But let's take Belichick a little bit because, of course, we know that Belichick has always had his nose up high.
Yes.
Now, I remember sitting at that playoff game when the Pittsburgh Steelers played him.
Yep.
And I remember sitting in that, what was it, 20 below zero weather.
Yeah.
Sitting up there in the stands, and we were like maybe 20 points ahead.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
And I remember all of a sudden they came back.
Yeah.
And they beat us.
Yeah.
And it was the most unusual. We all were standing there saying, what?
Yeah.
And I understand today the commissioner has asked Belichick to open up all of his tapes.
Yeah.
So, is the commissioner getting it right?
The commissioner has not closed the case, and he is doing the right thing because he's following all leads. The Jets have made some complaints. And then hearing all the different players, you know, hearing Hines, Ward, Steelers players, and other players who've been involved in playing against the Patriots, Chargers, or whatever, the commissioner is doing his due. And he has to because based on what he's done, the precedent he's set with punishing players, especially black players. So he has to continue on this path of making sure that all T's are crossed and all I's are dotted, to just make sure he is being fair and holding the managers to a high standard like he's holding the players to a high standard.
Now let's take this for instance. You've got a cheater on one side, allegedly,
yeah,
and you've got an alleged gambler over here.
Yeah.
Which one is worse?
Well, in the eyes of, with Michael Vick, he's broke the law. I mean, it's just that simple, cut and dry. It's the law. And whereas Belichick, he didn't commit a felony. I mean, that's not a felony. But
how do you exact the punishment? If there's more there? I mean, most people think that punishment was very like a spank on the hand for Belichick.
Well,
it's like a walk in the park for him.
I said the same thing, but at the same time, the door's still open for more punishment.
I think so. Now, I'm going to shift gears a little bit here. Of course, you know, Barry Bonds has broken Hank Aaron's record.
Mm-hmm.
He broke, of course, you know, Babe Ruth's record way back when. And you remember when Hank Aaron was breaking that record, how Hank Aaron had death threats against him.
I was telling people about it's so ironic that now everyone's, you know, Hank Aaron's so beloved. He is our home run hero. But when the man was breaking Babe Ruth's record, they wanted to kill him. So it's just so funny how society, how ironic society, how the media portrays people.
Now, how is the press going to balance the story about Rick Ankle, who apparently had a shipment of hormone-enhancing drugs, and Gary Bonds is allegedly have used steroids? How do you balance those two? Because I'm not seeing that much in the paper about him.
Well, there's a lot more to come with all the drugs and baseball players, and it's coming out even sooner. The problem with Barry Bonds is that he was approaching so-called, you know, America's hollow record. And Rick Ankiel, while he's coming back from he's having a fairytale season, he's not going to have impact on the history of the game as Barry Bonds. Now, I'm not saying that's right. But that's the perspective that people are looking for. Instead of looking at the perspective that, hey, we're vilifying the guy, you know, who broke a record, and there's another guy who pretty much committed the same crime.
Well, we're again at our break here. We're going to come back with our final comments here. This is Adam Oye, your host, and you're listening to the Sports Maverick Show. And I have a very special guest here, Gregory H. Lee, Jr. He's a senior assistant sports editor for the Boston Globe. And we have just been talking about the lack of diversity in sports reporting, some of the issues surrounding that, some of the criteria people use. And what I want him to do, I want him to come back and tell the mothers and fathers and the athletes out there how they could possibly pursue a sports career. Because we need more of you out there. We need more voices out there. And we need more people to basically feel some of those male Kuiper shoes. This is Ida Moye. We'll be with you in about 3 minutes.
Your internet flagship station for sports, Voice America Sports.
In a landscape dominated by male talk show hosts, the Sports Maverick Show with host Ida Moye, a.k.a. the Oprah of sports, has consistently offered a new dimension to sports since the year 2000. Ida's new five-part CD series entitled Survival Guide for Student Athletes from High School, College to the Pros is a must-have for every parent with an elite athlete. The Sports Maverick Show is where the best gets better on and off the field. Order your survival guide today. Log on to www.pro-readycoach.com. That's PROREADYCOACH.com. Pro-readycoach.com.
Here it is, sports fans, the Arthur Agee Sports Radio Show, where we talk about sports and everything in between, from high school to college sports, right up to the pros. Join host Arthur Agee, co-star of the 1994 sports documentary, Hoop Dreams, for the Arthur Agee Sports Radio Show every Tuesday at 2 p.m. Pacific Time, 5 Eastern, premiering on the Voice America Sports Channel. Arthur will host a variety of guests and will give the average fan a platform to voice his or her opinion about how sports play a significant role in our society. Get set for hard-hitting topics that cut to the soul of sports. See the sports industry through the eyes of the kid in the city and the kid in the suburbs. Hear from the businessmen and, yes, women from around the world. Whatever your passion is, football, basketball, baseball, golf, soccer, NASCAR, or hockey, the Arthur Agee Sports Radio Show is for you. That's every Tuesday at 2 p.m. Pacific Time, right here on the Voice America Sports Channel.
The fans now have a voice to speak their mind. No holds barred.
I just think that the coach made a mistake.
All crazy.
NFL, MLB, NBA, NHL. Speak up.
Speak up.
Or forever hold your mouth.
We ain't playing around here.
Voice America Sports.
You are listening to the Sports Maverick Show with Ida Moye. If you would like to join the conversation today, please call now. The number is 1-866-472-5787. That's 1-866-472-5787. Now, back to the Sports Mavericks.
Welcome back to the Spanish Maverick Show. This is Ida Moyer, your host, and you are listening to the Sports Maverick Show. In the studio, we have Greg H. Lee, Jr. He's Senior Assistant Sports Editor for the Boston Globe, and I want to thank him for being with us. Greg, you know, there's parents out there listening to this show. There's also athletes that listen to this show out there. And then there's aspiring-type athletes listening to this show, and caretakers. Now, you've had a phenomenal career, and I'm expecting great things from you because you are definitely leading the way here. I know you've been mentoring a lot of people. But tell the parents and athletes out there what they should be doing as far as preparing for a sports journalism career.
Well, one thing, you know, like for kids to go out there and to pursue careers in sports journalism is go to college and go to schools who have sports journalism programs or journalism programs in general. You know, at Morehouse College, Spike Lee started a fund. He funded a sports journalism program there, led by a good friend of mine, Ron Thomas, who's the director there. Just find a journalism program, and when you get to college, work for the college newspaper. It's the most important thing. And then during the summer, you need to apply for internships. The key to getting a job in this business is starting your career, getting internships at various newspapers, or getting into various programs such as the program I came out of and that I teach today is the Sports Journalism Institute. And you can go to www.sportsjournalisminstitute.org, and the deadline for applications are in December, where we select 13 students to get 10 days of training at the Poynter Institute in Florida, where we teach students how to prepare for careers in journalism, how to be better reporters, how to be better writers, and how to be better interviewers. And then after that, we send them to a newspaper around the country, such as the Houston Chronicle. We send them to the Minneapolis Star Tribune. We send them to 13 different papers where they get paid internships and real experience. You're not fetching coffee. You're actually writing stories in the newspaper, editing stories for the newspaper to get your experience. So by the time that you graduate from college, you should be qualified to get a job at a newspaper to become a sports reporter or a sports editor, whatever you decide to go into. I would also challenge kids to look at careers in editing, because there aren't a lot of black people or minorities in editing positions, and they're always starving for copy editors. They're always looking for editors of color that bring fresh voices to the desk. So be very flexible in what you want to do with your career. I know that's what I did. I was a reporter and I was an editor, and I was able to have more options open to myself to open doors for my career. So always keep your options open. That's a very important aspect, I think, in journalism in general. Don't limit yourself. Try to be versatile. Be versed in the Internet. Do anything you can to know about the Internet, producing content, writing content, shooting video, editing video. Just do a lot of things and be very versatile. That's, I think, the most important aspect of this. You need to be very versatile.
Well, you heard it here. I mean, he's telling you exactly what you need to do. Talk about the coursework. English is very important.
Yes.
That's a very essential thing. So reading about sports can help to prepare you for that, I would think.
I've always tell students, always read different newspapers around the country, and you can read it easily at your fingertips. You read Facebook and MySpace and all that other stuff, or read various columnists, various reports from different newspapers, and try to look at people's style. Everyone has a different style of writing, and at the end of the day, you need to have your own style. But in order to develop style, you need to understand how other people write and how people approach writing, and you should develop your own style. I have a young man right now, actually. He's a mentor and a mentee, and he actually reads books. I don't read, but it shows in his stories that he brings a different mindset to writing. He brings different aspects of storytelling in his stories, and you can tell just from the way he reads. He not only reads newspapers, he reads detailed books, he reads magazines I don't even subscribe to, but he does. And it just brings out the flavor and gives you a different type of voice that the newspaper is looking for.
Well, there you have it. You know, you're talking about basically bringing a voice to something that you love.
Yeah.
Effectuating change all around the world, because news is instantaneous, and on the Internet, it can go out to 100 million people out there. And at the same time, you know, you have a chance to basically get your opinion out there, which sometimes needs to be heard.
Exactly.
Because not everybody has all the right answers. And sometimes a new, fresh look at things actually helps a lot. Like, for instance, us, we basically cater to parents of athletes. And we're looking at trying to transition them through the hard times. And we deal from the educational side of it. We created this voice in 2004, and look where we are now. So, again, folks, you can do this. And, again, if you want to begin with your own little website, you know, that's a small investment. A lot of college kids begin with that. High school kids begin with that. And that's a good way to get started as well. But I think it's important for you to start and know that this is possible. That's the most important thing. And you've got a wonderful organization out there, the National Association of Black Journalism, that could actually help you with this. And that's a wonderful thing. And you've got these various different internships out there that you have available to you. So no excuses. Now, I understand that in 2008, there's going to be a major powwow coming together called the Unity.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, the Unity Convention is basically the four minority journalism organizations who come together for our annual convention. This will be the fifth one, the Asian group, the Hispanic group, the Native Americans, and, of course, the black journalists. And we all come together, 8,000 of us come together every 4 years to congregate to not only speak about the issues in journalism affecting us, but also to let the industry know that we are here to bring diverse voices. It'll be the world's largest job fair there. Every recruiter from every media company will be in the house looking for new talent. We also will have, probably more than likely we have the presidential candidates there debating. This year at NABJ, we had Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton speak to our group. So that would be a powerful thing. The last Unity Convention in Washington, D.C., we had the presidential candidates there as well. So it's not only going to be just for journalism and fellowshipping and reuniting with those people within your own cultural groups, but also, I know a lot of people in each group, and it's going to be I'm looking forward to it because, we don't see each other, all the time. We may talk to each other in email and stuff, or just actually see each other and to share stories of frustration, triumph in an industry that still is dominated by, white people. It's a great thing. The great experience is July 23rd to 27th at the McCormick Center in Chicago. Like I said, we're looking forward to it, and it's a great experience, and especially for young journalists, it's a great networking opportunity. That's the most important thing, I think, also as well in this industry, networking. I mean, I know so many people within the industry that can help me out, help others out, to connect, people to get jobs and better opportunities around the country, and I think, networking is also a key. It's who you know within the industry, and it's surprising a lot of people that know me, that don't really know me, don't know the type of connections I have, that I have influence within the industry, and people know to come to me if they need someone to fill a position.
Well, we know you now, Greg, and in fact, right now, my listening audience out there are asking me for how can they get in contact with you. If you want to give them an email address, why don't you go ahead and give that to them?
My email address, you can email me at gleejr9472 at aol.com. I'm pretty much online, most of the day. I'm online actually right now checking out some stuff. I'm always willing to answer questions about the industry, about careers in journalism, and just give people the tools or connect them to the right people they need to speak to make sure that they're on the right track on the journey we call journalism.
Well, we're at the end of our hour here. Greg, it has just been an absolute pleasure talking with you about this, and you really gave me a great insight on some of the various different things regionally, how it's perceived, as well as nationally, how it's perceived. And I'm expecting really great things from you, as well as the National Association of Black Journalists, because you're doing a wonderful job, and I'm looking to see this industry grow more and more and more. And if there's anything I can do for you, please let me know, too, because I think one of the things we've done is lend our voice out here on the Internet, and, of course, we know that there's not that many female minorities in sports.
You got it right.
And I can tell you this has been an uphill battle, but we are planning in November to start shooting our television program. And so we will have Sports Mavericks finally on the tube. So we've made our strides here, and thanks again to all our sponsors out there that have been with us from the beginning since 2004. Again, folks, we're going to say goodnight. We'll be back Tuesday at the same time, 5 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Central, and 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And again, we're going to send a shout-out to Henry Lawrence, Henry Killer Lawrence, who retired his jersey at Florida A&M University this past weekend. 78 will never be worn by anybody else there in the history of that fine tradition. And kudos to Henry for that wonderful, wonderful program they had on Saturday, as well as he's also has been inducted into the College Hall of Fame there. Again, good night. And Greg, thank you again. And it's been a blessing with you tonight. And remember, parents, hug your kids regardless of a win or lose, okay? Tell them you love them. This is Ida Moye saying good night.
Thank you for joining Ida Moye and the Sports Maverick Show. We hope you enjoyed today's conversation. If you have a question or a story you'd like to share with Ida, you can email her at sportsmavericks@yahoo.com. Sportsmavericks@yahoo.com. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next week.